We are honored to have the Rosh Yeshiva with us. We give Divrei Bracha, and then the Rosh Yeshiva has agreed afterwards to take some questions, answer some questions. I will be moving around the room if anybody has any questions they'd like to ask. Testing.
Shalom Aleichem. Excuse me for sitting. I just had pulled a muscle in my thigh. It's hard for me to stand. So let me greet all of you. Baruch Hashem, B'li Ayin Hara, Olam. And many of you, I never thought of you as having left the yeshiva. So very good to see you back. You know that the hallmark of Klal Yisrael is that we said Nasa v'Nishma, right? The Umas Olam asked Ma Kosuv Boy, what's written in the Torah? And we said Nasa v'Nishma. And the Gemara Shabbos gives three memories about this Nasa v'Nishma. Of course, Chazal don't repeat themselves. If they say three Chazal about Nasa v'Nishma, that each one is telling us a different aspect of Nasa v'Nishma. The first is, Kshom Yisrael Klal Nasa v'Nishma, I think it's Pei Tes and Shabbos, Klal Yisrael said Nasa v'Nishma, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Migilo Roz Zeh Levonai, who revealed this secret to my children, Shemishamshim Boi Malach HaShores. Malach HaShores, it says, Oisei Dvoroi, Lishmoya B'Kol Hashem. Malach HaShores first are Oisei Dvoroi, and then they listen to what they have to do. They don't ask first what to do, but they're ready to serve Hashem immediately. And then later they ask, what is there to do? So Klal Yisrael, where did Klal Yisrael learn that secret that the Malach HaShores use, which is to say, Naaseh, we'll do before we know even what we're supposed to do? That's the first memory of Chazal in Nasa v'Nishma. Then the Gemara goes on to say another memory. It says, Ma'irich Siv, Kisapua Batzei Yoah, King Hayosi Ben Abonis. Klal Yisrael is compared to a Tapuach Batzei Yoah, and Tosafot says Tapuach is an Esrig tree. An Esrig in a forest, King Hayosi Ben Abonis. Ma Tapuach, Piyo Yekoidim La'itzoi, Af Klal Yisrael Omru Nasa Lifnei Nishma. A Ma Tapuach Olav Koidim LePiryoy. Piryoy Koidim LeOlav. I'm sorry. Piryoy Koidim LeOlav. The fruit comes before the leaves. Af Klal Yisrael. They said Nasa before Nishma. It's the second member of Chazal. And the third member of Chazal is Rav was learning. And while he was learning, he was sitting on his, like they used to sit on their feet, his fingers were bleeding, and he didn't pay attention to it because he was so engrossed in his learning. So Amin came by, Apikoros came by and said, what an arm of pazizim you are, an arm that doesn't think when you do anything. Your mouths come before your ears. In other words, you said, Nasa before Nishma. You too, you don't pay attention, your finger is bleeding, and you're learning, you don't pay attention to your health. That's also a raya, how stupid you are, how hurried a people you are, how lack of thoughtfulness you have. So Rav said to him, yes, we're a nation that descended from the nation that said, Nasa v'Nishma, that's why we act this way. So three different chazal, which tells us Pshat and Nasa and Nishma. So Pshat is like this. Each one is telling us a different aspect. The first one about the Malachim is telling us that our creation is to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Like the Malachim, why don't they ask what they're supposed to do? Why do they say Nasa and then Nishma? Because they're created for that. They have no other purpose in life besides that. So Klal Yisrael also recognize that the Tachlis is to do Ratzon Hashem. The world is created for Torah. A human being is made to serve Hashem, So when the Kodesh Baruch is revealing to them how to serve Hashem, they're not going to ask what's written in it. That's it. That's what life is all about. That's the tachlis of the Bria. So the first thing is, what's the tachlis that they created to serve Hashem? And the second is the olim and the pri of a tree. Usually the olim come before a pri, because the leaves are there to protect the fruit. Because the olim protect the fruit from the sun and from wind, so they grow first and they protect the fruit. But a tapuach, the esrog tree, the pri can exist without the olim. In the tame and the esrog tree is taki, they last from year to year, and even when the leaves fall off, there's still, you have the esrog tree, the esrog on the tree. They don't need olim to protect them. The ikir is the pri. The same thing is klal yisrael. The pri is before the olim. What does that mean? That's the nimshul. The olim is always compared to the machziki haTorah. The Gemara says that the peres should pray for the leaves, that they should be miskayim, because without the leaves, there can be no fruit. What's that mean? The olim are the people who support Torah. That's the leaves. And the like the Gemara darshins, oleo lo yibol, the Gemara darshins, that sichas chum shel talmid chachom in sichas talmud. Even sichas chum of talmid chachom needs to be studied. Because the sichas chum of talmid chachom is his olim. That's the way he needs to survive. He needs to do business. He needs to talk to people. He has to live in this world. He has to have friends. So that's the olim of his life. And that, even his olim need limud, need to be understood. Because everything is related to Torah by Talmud Chochem. So the pshat is, the Talmud Chochem doesn't pay attention to his olim first. First comes the fruit, and then comes the olim. That means when he decides where to work, that's his olim, that's his leaves. He doesn't decide first where he'll make more money, where he'll get more prestige. He decides first, is there a rov in the city? Is there a shul? Is there a yeshiva in the city? Will I be able to learn or raise his children? That's what comes first. The pri comes first. Then comes the olim, and then comes the support of the Torah. The pri comes before the olim. So in importance, the Torah is the most important thing. And then he makes other cheshbonos. Olam hazeh is just subordinate to olam habo in the value system. So that's the second mashal of Nasa and Nishma. What's more important, the olam hazeh or Torah? We say olim are subordinate to the pri. The pri comes before the olim. Kitapuah batzei ayor. And finally, Rove said another aspect of Nasa Nishma. When a person learns Torah, he has to be so totally involved in Torah that there's nothing else exists. The Geschmackheit of Torah, the pleasure, the engrossment in Torah, how much you enjoy and pleasure and involvement in Torah, has to be so great that it blocks out every other interest. So even though his hand was bleeding, but his engrossment in Torah was so great that it blocked out any other feeling. He couldn't even feel the hand bleeding because of his geschmack, because of his love, because of his interest in learning Torah. That's the third aspect. And the way you learn Torah has to be Nasa v'Nishma. That's the ikir and total involvement. Okay, so we have three aspects of Nasa v'Nishma, and all are very negiah to each of us. We have to first realize we're created for that. We have to realize that we make our cheshbonos. Torah is the first cheshbon, and then comes out the other cheshbon. Finally, we have to get so involved in learning that we're not aware of whatever else happens around us. We have to be totally involved in Torah. So all of these things are applicable to every yeshiva bacher, and to you, and to everyone, every Jew, and especially those who are now in the Olam HaMaaseh. Not learning 24 hours in the yeshiva, but in doing other things, you have to remember what you're doing is the olim for your pere, and the pri is the nasa v'nishmo. And taken, how do you get there? You get there by being engrossed in Torah, by learning Torah, and getting involved in Torah in such a way that you recognize that finally that's what you're created for. Have atzlochem, broch, and everything you do. I think originally this is billed as a question and answer. So I came with answers. If you have questions, I'd like to. Yeah.
We have a few questions.
Okay.
We have a few questions that already were asked. So we'll start with this. Many of the people here are no longer B'nai Yeshiva, literally. They're out in the world. Came back to Yeshiva to spend some time to reconnect with their Chaverim, with their Rebbeim. So somebody asked, is there a difference between what we call a Rebbe and then what we call a Rav that one has in their life when they're out in a community? Is there a difference in Metzius between one's Rebbe and one's Rav, and the purposes and the services they provide? And is it important that person have both in their life?
Well, I understand the difference between a Rebbe and a Rav, and a Rav Paskin Shal is for you. And a Rebbe gives you guidance in all affairs of your life. Of course, a Rebbe is the most important because he's also a Rav. He's also paskin for you. That's included in his being a Rebbe. So, not many people zeche to a Rebbe. It's not common nowadays for people to have a Rebbe. They give them guidance, and they could get not just in the Shulchan Aruch, the fourth Shulke Shulchan Aruch, but the fifth Chelik of Shulchan Aruch. But a Rebbe is the most important thing you could have. You have to have a Rebbe, you have to have someone that you get shilas to, in your Malach HaChaim, in your derech, in your decisions, and what you think is important, what's unimportant. The Rebbe has to keep you straight with your value system, and your Nasa and Nishma.
Okay. Another question that was sent in was, if somebody who works full time, and he's careful to set aside daily to be kavei itim l'taira, and he's trying to decide how to make use of that time. The question was, should he learn? He has the option, two options, to learn something that he enjoys very much, but he will be learning it by himself, or to learn something that he will not enjoy quite as much, but he will be learning it with a quality chavrusa. Which is the better? What is the better use of his time?
Most of them, I think, require a chaver, someone to learn with. When you learn with someone else, your ideas get sharpened, you understand things better. You have a conversation about it, and you understand things more clearly. If it's a quality chavrusa that you can gain more, I think a chavrusa overweighs the learning by yourself, even with gishmak. Because you'll know more, you'll remember more, and you'll accomplish more. It's all assuming that the chavrusa is a very good chavrusa.
Coming up on the Yom Tov of Shavuos, many have the minhag on Shavuos to stay up all night learning. Somebody asked, how important is the minhag to stay up learning Shavuos night? If it comes at the expense of the rest of Yom Tov, if it comes at the expense of the amount of quality time we'll be able to extend to his family, or is there an inherent value in it because it may show the chashivas of Torah to that child or to those members of his family?
Staying up all night is not a darabonon. It's a meaning that started about 500 years ago in Tzfas, and it became a minhag Yisrael. It's the only way to express the Yom Tov Shavuos, and now after Churban Beis HaMikdash has no mitzvahs except for this staying up all night. And it shows Avas HaTorah, and it shows your Mesilas Nefesh HaTorah. But again, if it's at the expense, if you can learn more by going to sleep on time, I think you should go to sleep on time. Just taking care of your family is not a reason. But if you can learn more, you can accomplish more by going to sleep on time. I think you should go to sleep on time. I mean, there's a lot to say for staying up all night with a rabura, getting up, hearing the parsha of Kriyas HaTorah, Maimon Har Sinai, the crack of dawn. It has a tremendous hashpah on a person, and that's why there's such a minhag. But nevertheless, if your learning will be better, if you won't stay up all night, you should not stay up all night. Of course, you have to decide with your Yetzer Tov, not with Yetzer Hara. You might be deciding because you feel like sleeping. I'm saying if your learning is better, then you should go to sleep early.
Is there anything inherently wrong with somebody's chiyas hachayim coming from something that is not a davar ruchni, i.e. they get chiyas, they obtain their chiyas from their job, from their career? Is that not a correct approach for a yid?
Look, there's a pleasure in doing a good job. There's a pleasure in solving a problem. There's a natural pleasure. And it's understandable that a person could enjoy doing a good job and solving a problem. But that's not his purpose in life. To think that that's your purpose in life is a big mistake. It's a horrible mistake because you focus yourself on the wrong things. Begin to think, that's what I'm made for. Again, that's not the Nasa Nishma that I described at the beginning of my talk today. So you have to have your value system straight. And there's nothing wrong with enjoying what you're doing. But you can't turn it into a number one priority in your value system. So you feel good. You feel good eating chicken also. Doesn't mean your tachlis in life is eating a chicken. But it's a pleasure. It's another pleasure. But it's not the tachlis of life. Your tachlis of life has to be to grow in ruchnius, grow in Torah, raise your family, to be b'nei Torah. That should be your tachlis in life. And the rest is side dish, the tasty side dish that you have. Baruch Hashem, you're enjoying your work. It's a wonderful thing. You solve the case in court, or you solve the problem in the computer. It's a very nice, it's understandable you should have pleasure. But that shouldn't be the tachlis in life.
I'm sure the Rosh Yeshiva is aware that Eretz Yisrael, as always, is in the news. Some people are not such fans of some of the things going on in Eretz HaKadosh. Some people are, some people aren't. What is the correct Hashkafas HaChaim for a Ben Torah in these times in regard to what's going on in Eretz Yisrael?
Eretz Yisrael was founded by Zionists. Most of Eretz Yisrael are secular Jews. The difference between a frum Jew in Eretz Yisrael and a non-frum Jew is the definition of what it means to be Jewish. I was once interviewed. I was once interviewed by a television producer for 60 Seconds, a famous television show. So he asked me, what's the difference between a religious Jew and a non-religious Jew? So I told him, a religious Jew is proud of being Jewish. A non-religious Jew is ashamed of being Jewish. Say to him. A non-religious Jew wants to be a goy. His culture is a goy. And a religious Jew, holds him back from achieving his goals. Because obviously they're going to hate us. Right? They made a state to be like goyim. Right? Lios am chofshi be'artzenu. That says it all. That tikva says it. They made a state to be like goyim, and all of a sudden we stand there with our beard and our payas and our protests for Shabbos and for arayas and everything else. We don't let them be like goyim. They'd like to be like everybody else. So they hate us because of that, because we're perverting their goal in life. We undermined the Zionist goal in life. So until now, until last year, it wasn't such a problem because the secular Jews controlled Israel. There's a few hundred people that control Israel. They don't make it public, but that's the fact. The ones who run the banks, the ones who run the media, the ones who run the newspapers and the big industries, they control the whole country. all of a sudden, power slipped out from underneath their fingers. The Datiyim, the Haredim, became major members of the coalition. Not only that, one of the things they control is the court. We want to undermine the court. The court has the right to say what's correct, what's wrong, even though they're a minority, even though the Knesset can vote one way. But the courts have a right to say what's right and what's wrong. They can decide that we should remain goyim. We should have the goyish values. And suddenly we're going to change the courts. That's their last resort. Not only is the government run by frum people, but the courts now they want to undermine. That was too much. They lost control. They lost control, and the only way they do it, they're going to regain control by taking to the streets and fighting a democratically elected Knesset with the argument that it's undemocratic. Like it doesn't make sense, but things don't have to make sense always. So I was on that airplane on the way back from Israel where a pilot made a speech on Yom HaShoah where he said, we have to fight for democracy so that another Shoah shouldn't happen again. And that's what we're doing in Israel right now. We're fighting for democracy. It was the fights in Israel against the religious people is a fight for democracy, and it's to prevent the Shoah. If the Jews take over the country, it's going to be a Shoah. That's the type of attitude. Of course, people protested against the pilot. He apologized later. And I don't know if he got fired or didn't get fired, whatever it is. But he had his captive audience and decided to tell us all that we're against democracy. That's what it is. It's a fight for a definition of what is a Jew. Is a Jew proud of being Jewish or ashamed of being Jewish? They're all ashamed of being Jewish. From the Netanyahu all the way down, they're all ashamed of being Jewish. They would wish they were goyim. They made a poll of high school students in America, in Israel. Would you prefer to have been born a goy or be born a Jew? And I think 70% said they prefer to be born a goy. That's what it is. What do you have to be proud of? That Israel has a soccer team that's second rate? Or what do they have? What is there to be proud of as a Jew? Only proud of that they're like goyim. That's all. That's what it is. So now they're fighting tooth and nail to uproot what looks like a takeover of the state by the Haredi people. It probably won't last long because there'll be another election and the Haredi will fight among themselves and they'll probably not be able to maintain control in the election. I don't know what's going to happen. No one knows. But they're afraid of that. It's a fear by those who have been controlled until now of the country, those few hundred people. How can we get rid of the frum people that seem to be taking over the country and undermining our power? That's all. So that's what happens. Just the other day, an anchor on a television show called the Haredi Jews these words, Nazis and parasites. Could you imagine? Imagine someone calling in America an Arab a Nazi or a parasite, or in Israel a Nazi or a parasite. Certainly you couldn't call a black a Nazi or a parasite. Religious Jews are hefker. That's the state of Israel. That's the secular people in Israel. They've lost power. Demographics, Poshet, the election was such that five elections in one or two years, whatever it is, and this time the election was that the frum people had a tremendous vote, and they were able to make the coalition. That's what's happening now. But it's very serious, because who knows? It could be a civil war. Who knows? Look at that. I wonder what's on. But it's coming out. It's coming out to the fore. Those who thought until now that the Zionists are good little boys that just misled made a horrible mistake. They hate Judaism. They're ashamed of being Jewish. And now it's coming to the fore. Okay. Any other questions?
Baruch Hashem, in today's times, there are many people who are Balei Tshuva, who are being introduced to Torah learning for the first time. Somebody who's coming from that point of view, who does not have the benefit of a Torah education, a cheder education, what approach should they take as they try to come close to the Bnei Shalom and how they to begin learning Torah? What are the key ideas that they have to have in mind, and what are the best approaches for those types of people to start learning? somebody who is new to Torah learning, what is the best approach he should take to have a proper introduction or to start on the proper path in learning Torah?
He has to have a good Magid Shir. He has to have someone that teaches him. He can't start from nowhere. He has to have someone to teach him. He has to learn the basics and go to a good Shir day after day, whatever he can, and learn Torah. Or yes, he doesn't have that time. He has to read a lot. He has to read a lot about Torah. But he's not going to find the proper path without learning. He has to learn a lot. That's all.
Somebody asked the following question. You have a person who owns a business that Baruch Hashem, he's able to support his family with. He has the ability to invest more time and more resources to make that business even more successful. However, that will come at the expense of time that he can spend on other things like family and learning, not to eliminate it completely from his life and his day, but it will reduce it. Should he take advantage of this opportunity or should he remain with the status quo?
It depends. Can he grow in learning? If he can grow in learning, he's not mechuyev to expand his business to support all the Torah institutions. If he can't learn, some people are not able to learn. They can learn just rudimentary learning. They're not able. If he can't learn, then he should invest his time in expanding his business and helping others to learn. But if he can grow himself and become a more learned Jew, he's not mechuyev to go into business and help others. I remember in Bnei Brak, there was a man. He used to sell dishes, I think. And when he got older, he wanted to retire and to sit and learn the Beis Medrash. His son told me he went to the Chazon Ish to ask him if he should do that. He should retire. Chazon Ish says, no. Your job is to earn money and to support yeshivas. That's what the punishment gave you, that job. He saw that the man is not able to learn really anything significant, and his job was to support Torah. He shouldn't give up that job. Someone who has the capacity to grow and wants to grow, just doesn't have the time, is not mechuyev to expand his business at that expense.
Does it make a difference in that circumstance if he's committed to donating those increased dollars for Torah causes, for Tumchei Torah, for Yungal Light, for yeshivas, for schools? Same answer. Okay. Anybody questions from the audience?
We only know that we're sitting and learning the best way to be the Kabbalah Torah. Are there any other things that we should be concerned about as far as the Kabbalah Torah?
Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. Are there other things that a Yid should be focusing on as he prepares for Kabbalah Satara? Limud HaTorah, we're spending the day in Limud HaTorah. Are there other things, other areas that are maybe not equally as important, but also important so that one can prepare himself properly for Kabbalah Satara?
Yeah, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, the sixth Perek, says that there are 48 things which are necessary for Kabbalah Satara. Those 48 things listed there in detail. And the Vilna Gaon says that there can be subsumed under three categories. There's the three major categories for all 48 things. One is you have to learn. All right, let's push it. You have to learn about Smota. Learn to be you. But the other two are Anovo, Midas Toivis, you have to be Anonov. You have to think about somebody else in order to be Mekabel Torah. And the third is Istapkus B'muot. You have to not learn it, look after Gashmias, not look after Tivus, unnecessary Tivus. You want to be Zeche to Torah, you have to eat what you need to eat, whatever you need to do, and not more than that. And that's how you Zeche to Torah. So three things, Limud, Anovo, Istapkus B'muot. Those are three categories that encompass all 48 ways of Kabbalah Satara. So we have to emphasize these three major things in ourselves in order to be Mekabel Torah. So lemaisa, not just theory, but lemaisa.
Perhaps this will be the last question. We live in an age where Baruch Hashem, Torah is disseminated in various forms. Is it inherently better for a person to hear words of Torah, shiurim, live in a format like this? Or is it equally as beneficial to listen to shiurim that are recorded or to watch videos of shiurim that were recorded? Or is there a difference between the two? And if so, what is the difference?
The Gemara says that one Talmud said, the reason I'm greater than my friends is because I saw a mayor machurov. I saw a mayor from behind. If I had seen him from my face, his face, I would have even be greater. There's something about seeing someone person to person. When you hear the Reiter in a video or in a recording, you don't see the person. There's a connection between two people. When a physical, real person speaks to you, there's something that comes across from his neshama to you, not just the words. Torah is not words. Torah is neshama comes across. There's an inner kedusha that comes across in the words of Torah that comes from the person that teaches that Torah. So you have to hear from a person. You have to learn Torah from a person, a live person. Second best is a sefer. Second best is a third best is a recording or a video. But the best thing is a live person that teaches you Torah, where you see how much it means to him, where you see the words of Torah alive in the person, and it comes across to you and it makes an impression on your neshama. Right? You have to see your Rebbe either from his back at least, but certainly from his front is even better. Just when you hear a recording, you don't see him neither from the back nor from the front. You don't see him b'chol. So it's not a good substitute.